Today we're going to give attention to the subject of Thanksgiving, and even as I say that, I feel somewhat guilty. The old adage says, don't put all of your eggs in one basket. And yet it seems that when it comes to the subject of Thanksgiving, that's oftentimes what we do. We pause once a year, briefly, and we try to put all of those eggs into one basket. When in fact, Thanksgiving, gratitude in general, should be a daily expression of the life of any believer. It is interesting to note the history of Thanksgiving, given that it is an entirely secular holiday. When we celebrate Christmas, we celebrate the birth of Jesus. When we celebrate Easter, we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. Holidays both built around significant biblical events. Thanksgiving, on the other hand, has no such connection to a biblical event. In fact, history tells us that in 1621, the pilgrims at Plymouth gathered together in a time of great need and offered thanks to God for the provision he had made that allowed them to be sustained. History also tells us that it may have been in 1607 when the Virginia Commonwealth began celebrating Thanksgiving, and so maybe even predating what we most often reflect upon as the historical beginning of Thanksgiving. In 1623, after a particularly bountiful harvest, Thanksgiving had continued, and the pilgrims again gathered and thus almost made it a regular occurrence, it would seem. Down through the years of our nation's history and our friends to the north in Canada, we have celebrated a time of Thanksgiving. But it was not until 1863 that Abraham Lincoln established a federal mandate through presidential proclamation that would make Thanksgiving something that all of the country would celebrate at the same time, that being the last Thursday of November. It continued that way, and we saw Thanksgiving become something that was almost expected, and it remained that way until 1941, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, again through presidential proclamation and then later through legislative action, moved Thanksgiving from the last Thursday to the fourth Thursday. And so the fourth Thursday of November is the date that the nation celebrates Thanksgiving. I found it very interesting to note that in the legislative notes that involved the move from the last Thursday to the fourth Thursday, it stipulates in order to provide an economic boost to the country. They wanted to extend the Christmas shopping season in 1941. And it has continued now that to the point where we get to the very last seconds of Thanksgiving, we launch into the frenzy of the Christmas season. Now, some of that maybe sparks some interest in you, and some of it maybe it doesn't. I found it interesting, not significant, but interesting. And it gave me an understanding of Thanksgiving, an understanding of the holiday. But understanding Thanksgiving is something far more than that. Understanding Thanksgiving is never going to be relegated to an annual holiday event, regardless of which Thursday in November it happens on. It is never going to be relegated to a presidential proclamation or legislative action, for such things cannot be mandated in that regard. And it is never going to be something that can be encroached upon by the press of another holiday season or the crush of a retail frenzy. True Thanksgiving and understanding what that means is not going to have those kinds of limitations upon it. For when we see it from the biblical perspective, we understand it in an entirely new light. So today, if only for once a year, maybe we can have a better understanding of thanksgiving. Understanding thanksgiving, let's do so rather than from a historical perspective, from a biblical perspective. You can turn in your Bibles to the Gospel of John to chapter 6 and hold your place there at verse 5. We're going to look at verses 5 through 15 and then also include verse 23 a little later on. But just hang on there for a moment. A man named Don Pusick told the story several years ago of a Thanksgiving celebration in his home that was in trouble. They had no money to afford even a small turkey, and yet he decided that as a family of eight, they would enjoy one another and express grateful hearts to God no matter what they had on the table. He says, "As a father, it broke my heart for my children to experience want. But as a father, I viewed it as a teaching time for my children to learn about the miracle of thanksgiving." Sometimes the greatest thanksgiving expression comes only when it is juxtaposed against the backdrop of need or want. Contrast helps us to see things more clearly than we otherwise would. If you are going to have a procedure done, whether it's an MRI or a CAT scan, the best way to do that procedure is with contrast. If you need a heart catheterization, they're going to inject into you a dye that will provide contrast. And it is that contrast that allows them to see with clarity what is going on inside the human body. The same thing is true as we look at everything else in life. Even the projectors that are displaying the slides on the screen are rated based on their contrast ratio, their ability to distinguish various colors, and the distinction and differentiation between them. It helps us to see with clarity when we have contrast. Here was a father gathered with his family, unable to provide even the most basic elements of the traditional Thanksgiving meal. And yet contrast that with a heart that is going to be grateful and determines to be grateful in spite of what is there. It is easy to say thank you when the table is piled high. It is an altogether different matter when it is empty. Biblical gratitude and thanksgiving knows no bounds and is not limited by the presence of ease or bounty. Biblical thanksgiving is something that should be consistent in every single day of every moment. It should be consistent regardless of the circumstance. And when we understand thanksgiving from that perspective, it changes everything. In chapter 6 of John's Gospel, beginning with verse 5, it says, "Lifting up his eyes then, and seeing that a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, 'Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?' You know the story of the feeding of the 5,000. This is the beginning of it. And it is a reminder to us that when we are faced with crushing need, it is good to be reminded, don't panic. Do not panic is the first thing that I want you to learn when you face the needs and the issues and the wants and the circumstances. Gratitude and understanding thankfulness is something that can help us to find a stability in the midst of uncertain times. And the best thing that we can hear at a moment like this is do not panic." Suddenly, Jesus and the disciples were confronted with an overwhelming need. Jesus did not respond as if something terrible or unusual had happened. He simply poses a question. He does not panic. We will always have needs. It is the nature of being human beings. We were not created to be self-sufficient. We try to be. We want to be. We strive toward that end, but it is nothing more than an illusion. We will always be in need. Understanding the fact that needs exist regardless of circumstance is something that can help us to understand better the power that thanksgiving and gratitude brings into the life. But you must hear the message, do not panic. Sometimes we are surprised by needs. Needs seem to hit our lives with a fury that leaves us breathless or fearful. Whether it's a bill that comes unexpected, poor health that arrives without warning, or crisis that rises up unannounced, these are the kinds of needs that all people face. It is helpful to remind ourselves that we will always need something. The fact that some needs surprise us does not mean that they surprise God. Far from being unprepared, our Father is well aware of our needs, all of them, all the time. Jesus posed the question in order to help identify the need, to provide for them contrast. How will we buy bread? Where can we get bread for all of these people? The time comes when we have to throw away the safety nets if we are going to depend and trust on God. It says in verse 6, he said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Jesus was simply testing him. Jesus asked Philip where they were going to get the food to feed the huge crowd. Jesus was conscious of the need, already had a supernatural solution in mind, but was calling it to Philip's attention and thus all the other disciples. It was a test. More than any other life situation, needs expose and test our internal support system. Needs reveal the true object of our trust. Where do we turn for help in a time of crisis? Do we cry out to the Lord, and do we confidently trust him to give what we need when we need it? The contrast of this situation in the Bible reminds us of every other contrasting situation, and it calls into question, it tests what we trust. What do you trust? Who do you trust? Where is your trust? Needs help to show us in whom or what we really trust. Therefore, they serve a purpose. To a casual observer, Jesus was asking Philip how they were going to feed this crowd. But John explains that he was really testing Philip to see where he would run to when confronted with a need so great that no human safety net would work. Your Father in heaven is calling you to live without safety nets. That is, to live without trusting in your own abilities all the time, without trusting in the circumstances that surround you all the time, without trusting in the abilities of someone else that you run to all the time. He is calling on us to face those circumstances of life that test the boundaries of our trust and to determine that we will not cling to something that is limited or earthly or destined to failure, but rather we will cling only to him. It is something for us to do that we may start out not doing very well, but at least you can begin growing in that understanding of genuine thanksgiving that will help you to trust, especially in those times when you are tested. It says in verses 7 through 9, Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not be enough bread for each of them to have a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many? Keep your eye on the Lord is a good reminder of how to go through this process. We don't panic. We refuse to trust in our own abilities, and so now we shift our attention. We keep the focus on God, the focus on Christ. Keep your eye on the Lord. Philip ran to his own personal ability to feed this crowd, and he started calculating in his head how long he would have to work and how much money he would have to make. He did the math. His calculations were flawless, but his formula was flawed. He knew what he would have to do in order to feed these people just a little bit. And the conclusion he came to was that he couldn't work fast enough, long enough, or hard enough to provide what they needed. Do you ever look to your own abilities? I think we all do. I think that's where we start. It's just natural. You're going to rely upon yourself. And there's nothing wrong with being the person that God has made you to be and doing what he has equipped you to do. I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't. But I am suggesting that if you rely upon yourself alone, then what you're going to do is you're going to face that circumstance with a lot of fear, because intuitively you know that you can't work hard enough to take care of it. I think it's one of the most difficult realities of dealing with a lot of the crisis in life is that there are some things we simply cannot change. Are you a fixer? Most of us are fixers. Almost all men are fixers. Some women are fixers. We want to fix everything. Some women don't want to fix everything until we've had sufficient time to cry about it. Then they'll fix it. We got to feel something first. Men, we just want to fix it. In fact, if we can fix it before we have to feel anything, that would be even better. There's some things we can't fix. That's tough. That's hard for us to take. It is something we don't want to hear. It is not what we want to do. We want to correct whatever is wrong. We want to fix whatever is broken. We want to heal whatever is hurt. We want to restore whatever has been disrupted. Sometimes we cannot, and it reminds us of the limitations. We need to keep our eyes fixed on Christ rather than on our own ability. Philip tried to do what he could do. He looked at all the situation. He calculated what he could accomplish on his own strength, and he was overwhelmed. There's nothing here that I can do. There's nothing that I can do. But if you read on, it says that one of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what are they for so many?" Andrew looked at what was immediately available as a solution. The small lunch may have been a feast for the boy, but it could not begin to eliminate the need confronting the disciples. It was something that was overwhelming, and it seemed almost paltry in comparison to the crush of this great crowd. And so it was all they had, and they didn't have anything else to offer. So that Philip would say, "There's no way, Lord, even if you were to work for an entire year, you couldn't generate enough income in order to buy enough bread that would even give them a taste." And then Andrew says, "Well, you see this throng of people that are gathered all around us, and all we've got are these loaves and fish." They came to the conclusion that what they had simply wasn't enough. Not only were their safety nets ripped apart by the overwhelming need, but their theology was exposed. God was not a powerful provider for Philip and Andrew at that moment, but rather he was a distant spectator who was simply observing the problems that they were facing. God was not an interested father, but for them he had become nothing more than an absentee creator. And that is where so many people live. God is distant. God is removed. God is telling you to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps and deal with it. And that is not at all who God is. Our God is very much involved, and he is very present with us. It does not mean that he hasn't gifted us and equipped us and called us and enabled us. It means that in the midst of all of that, that ultimately our gaze, our eyes must remain fixed on the author, the perfecter of our faith. And it is an opportunity for us to shift our gaze away from the crisis and on to the one who sustains us. Thanksgiving is an expression of trust. They did not really believe that God would take care of them. They've been distracted from the basic truths of faith. Their view of God had become distorted, not so uncommon. In fact, oddly enough, and I say oddly just because of the context in which this verse is offered, Paul warned the Roman believers about this warped view of God that results from an attitude of ingratitude. Listen to how he says it. "For though they knew God, they did not glorify him as God or show gratitude." I have read that passage so many times. Romans 1 tells us that the world did not acknowledge God, did not glorify God, did not recognize God, but I've never noticed that they did not show gratitude to God. Instead, it says their thinking became nonsense. Their senseless minds were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools, and they exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, four-footed animals, and reptiles. God had revealed himself in such a profound and powerful way through the created order, and yet man rejected God and instead chose to worship the creation that he had made and chose to make gods for themselves that bore the image of the creation rather than that of the Creator. Why? Because they had no gratitude. Understanding Thanksgiving has absolutely nothing to do with the holiday, but it has everything to do with the strength of one's faith. And keeping our focus on Jesus enables us to be reminded that we worship Him, not that which He has made. When all we can do is muster together a prayer of gratitude or a prayer of thanksgiving, when everything is going as we think it should, or when everything is provided for and all needs are met, then our focus is on our stuff and our ease. And we are little different than the idolaters of Romans 1 who have made for themselves gods of that which is mortal. As a consequence of ingratitude, lost men and women cannot see God as He really is. They miss His glory, replacing Him with gods of their own creation. It is vital that we maintain a grateful, trusting spirit in the face of needs. Otherwise, our view of God will be skewed and false. We can seek Him and call upon Him, believing in our hearts that He is an incredibly gracious and generous Father who is well aware of our needs and present in all. Keep your focus, your eyes on the Lord. Fourth, choose to thank God for all things. Look at what it says in verse 10. Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told the disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments, that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who has come into the world." Jesus performed a powerful miracle that stands out in the minds of all who were there, certainly, but also in the minds of all who have read these words down through the ages. One of the most familiar Bible stories to all people, even people who don't know the Bible and don't know Jesus at all, know something of this story and will maybe quote it incorrectly or make reference to it wrongly, but nonetheless, there is an awareness of it. It has stood the test of time, and it stands out as one of the great miracles of the time of Jesus. Why? Why is that? How does this compare to so much else that we have seen in the theophanies of God that have been displayed down through the ages as He has brought to life the revelation of His power and His love and His grace and His presence in the world? I'm not sure, but I am sure of this. I am sure that it did stand out. I am sure that it was something that resonated in the minds and the hearts of many people. And it struck at the very basic chord of need that existed in those folks then and still remains for all of us today. The fundamental thing we all need to eat. And so that was something that they identified with. And they couldn't help but wonder, if we make him king, will he feed us from now on? We'll never work again. The women folk thought, "I'll never have to grind wheat and make flour and bread again. God will just do it for us. Jesus will provide it." Yeah, somebody will have to come up with a couple of loaves somewhere, But we can take turns, you know. I don't know what was going through their minds, but I do know that it struck at the basic chord of who they were. Let me suggest to you that there is something even deeper. There is something even deeper that can spark within you an even greater expression of gratitude that will have a genuine foundation upon which you can grow. When you choose to thank God for all things, it changes everything. It shifts the focus back on Him. It trusts the results to Him. And it celebrates whatever comes from Him. And that's what Jesus did. He chose to thank God for all things. He had them sit down. And the Bible says He took the loaves and, giving thanks, distributed them. The disciples were astounded. Jesus took the resources they had, which were woefully inadequate. He gave thanks to God as a choice, and two miracles resulted. There was the miracle of the inadequate becoming more than abundant, and everyone ate as much as they wanted. That much we get. But there's a second miracle. It was the miracle of understanding. You see, the disciples never forgot what they had witnessed that day. The day after this event, the Bible records later on in chapter 6, something that is very significant. John described a boat that touched the shore from Tiberias. He says this in verse 23, "Other boats from Tiberias came near the place where they had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks." The place where they ate the bread after the Lord gave thanks. They remembered the event, but what they remembered most was the understanding that enabled the event. It was Jesus in submission to the Father giving grateful expression of confident faith to Him. That's what they remembered. There He gave thanks. The disciples never forgot what they had witnessed. The day after, as John described, the boat that touched a shore near the place where Jesus gave thanks, this spot became branded in their memories so that they would never forget what had happened. Choosing, as Jesus did, to thank God in that moment of contrast. So many, but so little. Believing in his heart that God could produce something that would meet all the needs. He showed us a greater understanding of thanksgiving. The people closest to Jesus were the disciples. They were his friends. They were his intimate companions. It is interesting to note that all of this took place in the context of those relationships. And it makes me think that when we offer our expressions of thanksgiving, we should do it together. That's a good thing. It's a good thing that we would do these things together because it encourages us. Some may be a little weaker than others, so the strong can help the weak. Some may have a better focus or sharper attention on God so they can help those who are distracted. Some may understand this business of thanksgiving and gratitude at a deeper level of faith, and so they can help others to grow. If we have to do this by ourselves, then we end up alone, and it seems to decrease or to shorten the longevity of our gratitude. But when we do it together, it increases it. It allows us to celebrate together, to celebrate with one another, through one another. And so it's an important element and it's an important aspect of all that we are to do in Thanksgiving. I think it's one of the reasons why this holiday brings us together as it does. Do it together. You see, it would have been easy for him to have acted quickly or to remove the anxiety of the hearts of those that were with him, but he didn't. He asked questions. Jesus moved deliberately. He trained their hearts to be grateful at all times. And together, they learned some important lessons. Lessons that are difficult to master alone. And we need to learn new lessons. That's one thing. But to walk through an experience of life, that's another thing. And that's where this business of gratitude, contrasted with the crisis of the hardships of the needs of life, becomes even more important as something that we would do corporately. This is the reason why we gather together to worship. This is the reason why we pray for one another. This is the reason why Christianity never exists in a vacuum, but always in a body. This is why the church is the means by which God is doing all that he is doing in the world and will continue to do so till Jesus comes again. This Thanksgiving, may it be with grateful hearts together. Well, I told you the story of Pastor Pusick that they faced this Thanksgiving several years ago. He said we had no alternative. We simply had to face the need together. And so we got together as a family and we prayed and we thanked God for his care, determined to honor the Lord as a gracious and loving Father no matter what needs we face. Shortly before Thanksgiving Day, a friend arrived on our doorstep, offered our family a turkey. It was an extra one they had received from his wife's employer. Unaware of our need, that friend had become the instrument of God. It was not a life and death need. It was a small thing. But it was just like the Lord. While feeding my family of eight is not equivalent to feeding 5,000, the unexpected arrival of that turkey impressed our children with the importance of maintaining a grateful spirit in the face of needs. And in that moment, we experienced a miracle of thanksgiving. In that moment, we understood thanksgiving as never before. Understanding Thanksgiving this year. It's a holiday, I know. But it's so much more. Understand that these circumstances that are harder to be grateful for are the ones that provide contrast. And it is against the backdrop of life's greatest darkness that the pure and holy light of Jesus shines brightest. And because of that, you will always have a reason to say thank you.